We've already done a couple of programs with Rich Stahlkopf of PRBO Conservation Science, but there were some things that we could not include. They're not outtakes for sure, but we just didn't have enough time in the first two segments. So we thought we'd put together a little bit of a conversation with Rich Stahlkopf, and we start with the subject of bird behavior. I asked Rich if there was anything about bird behavior that just spoke to him and where he said, wow.
Well, the first thing that came to mind is the dominance of a male hummingbird at a nectar source. It is just amazing how fast those birds can move. And amazing to me, it's like magical. I don't understand how, and nobody does, how those little beings can perform all those physical feats, chasing others away, flying back and forth, patrolling their area, on just a little bit of sugar water. Every once in a while, I'd take a seat and get a sip. And then they're flaring their amazing gorget jewel-like feathers. That's just outrageous.
The male, then, is the one with the colors?
The male in most birds are more colorful than the females. The females, although beautiful, must be more cryptic to be invisible while on their nest or doing nesting activities. And the males need these colorful things for, number one, showing off for females, two, flaring their colors at other males, and just generally being flamboyant. Hummingbirds can rotate their wings. They have like a ball and socket joint in their shoulder, as we do, but they can do pretty much shallow 360-degree arcs with their wings and go forwards or backwards. They can fly forwards and backwards like the Starship Enterprise. They're just so amazing.
Next, Rich and I talked about the common plover, the killdeer.
The killdeer is common around soccer fields and plowed fields along the shore. They have this wonderful nest predator distraction. If a predator is approaching their nest, which is always on the ground, always in gravel, always four eggs, one of the adults will leave the area screaming its call, pretending to have a broken wing, feigning a broken wing, just flopping along on the ground and flaring their beautiful orange rump patch, spreading their black and white tail feathers. And the predator, say a fox, is distracted, even though it probably didn't know that the nest was there to begin with, is distracted and led away from the area to a point where the killdeer feels, if you will allow that word, that that's far enough, and it just flies up and goes around in circles. Just dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee, got you out of there.
Is it also true with birding that when you're on a bird walk, very often you're hearing the bird but not seeing it?
Oh, yeah. That audio identification is just huge for those of us that do bird surveys, especially, or just seeking out what's back there in the woods. It's extremely important to practice learning calls and songs, and but then as soon as you go 100 miles away in any direction, there's a whole new set of songs and calls to learn that also is endless.
Another incredible topic has to do with the shapes and sizes and curvatures of shorebird beaks.
And evolutionarily, this is the idea that we have. Through evolution, those, say, sandpipers have diversified into different feeding structures, different feeding behaviors. And the little least sandpiper with its short, straight bill is sometimes drilling in the mud, and they're picking up, they're all eating pretty much the same thing. But what we like to think is that they could use those tools, their beaks, for different purposes. The long-billed curlew, which is our largest sandpiper, the females, which are bigger than males, have bills that can be 9 inches long and are steeply down-curved. The bill of the long-billed curlew almost exactly equals the shape of the burrow of the ghost shrimp. So a long-billed curlew starts its bill, this is a feeding with intent, it's going into a specific burrow to pick up a specific item, will slide a spill all the way underneath the sand until the curlews, the top of the curlew's head, its head feathers are on the sand. And the tip of the bill has neurons, it's sensitive and also flexible. They can grab onto the ghost shrimp and pull it all the way back out of that hole, sometimes only to be mugged by a willet. Willets are very smart at this. They're very good at defending a small territory, especially against other willets, but against almost everybody there. But sometimes they will allow a curlew or a marbled godwit, one, to come into their territory. And we could do all sorts of anthropomorphic stories about that. Oh, welcome to my territory. But and then the curlew or the godwit with their specialized tools, marbled godwits have like a 6-inch bill that's slightly upcurved. The curlew's 9 inches downcurved. And so they have those special tools. And that's the deal. They dig out some nice prey item and the willet just smacks them and takes it away.
So we want to look for, when you look at the beaks, some of them are drilling, digging, some are scooping. So just focus on the beaks will tell you a lot about the bird and its behavior.
That is correct. But back to the curlew. Curlews probably evolved in the Midwest, in the Great Plains, long-billed curlew. And so they're really good at chasing grasshoppers around, too, as well as it. Maybe it's coincidental that their beak is the same shape as the ghost shrimp. But yes, a lot of the birds that are the stitchers and the drillers are pretty much, they're just eating mud. They're eating mud with highly organic content. They are not after specific prey items. So they're passing a lot of sand and mud to pick up, to strain out the nutrients that are mostly dead invertebrates that are just part of the sandy shelf.
That's Rich Stahlkopf of PRBO Conservation Science. Want to thank Rich, and of course, you for listening. And also want to encourage you to come back to yourwetlands.org for future updates. Thanks again. I'm Jerry Kaye.